Good morning and welcome back to Nachyami. Today we are going to be learning together Perek Zion, the seventh chapter of the book of Dibrei Hayamim Beis. And the topic of today is going to be the dedication of the Mizbech and the vision at night. Our Perek is constituted of 22 psukim, and the parallel parashios can be found at the end of Melachim Aleph Perek Ches, the beginning of Melachim Aleph Perek Tes. The first thing we hear about in the first four psukim is the fire from the heaven. We hear as Shlomo HaMelech finishes his very long prayer, as we just saw at the end of the last perek, there was a fire which miraculously comes down from heaven, consuming the burnt offerings and the sacrifices, and Hashem's glory fills the Beis HaMikdash. We are told that the Kohanim cannot enter into the Beis HaMikdash because of the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and everybody sees. As when they see the fire coming down, they prostrate themselves on the floor and they thank Hashem, they sing to Hashem, Hoidos Lashem Ki Tov Ki Lalam Chastoi, they praise Hashem for His eternal goodness and every sacrifices. So this is the first step of the Perek. What's the significance of the fire coming down from heaven? The Malbim actually quotes a Midrash Sifra. This is usually a Midrash Halacha in Sefer Vayikra, Simon Mimites, which says that from the time that Moshe Rabbeinu had brought the fire down from heavens onto the Mishkan, when inaugurating it, that fire never actually extinguished on the Mizbeach of the Mishkan. And therefore, in a certain sense, what's happening over here is the transfer, the public transfer of that fire and that power to the nation of Israel. That's what seems to be going on over here, as now it goes into the Migdash from the Mishkan. Very important move. We now hear about from Sukkim Hay to Vav that the king Shlomo is starting to sacrifice. We hear a huge amount of sacrifices brought as part of the dedication of the house. We hear 22,000 cattle and 120,000 of the flocks are all sacrificed, and the Kohanim are standing, everybody's singing and playing the instruments. To praise Hashem's everlasting kindness with all the instruments that David HaMelech made. The Kohanim are playing, the Levim are singing. It's a very beautiful description. And then we hear from Sukkim Zayin to Yud Aleph how Shlomo HaMelech sanctifies the inner courtyard the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash through its use. And there are sacrifices being brought everywhere across the area of the Mizbeach. Why? Because the Mizbeach HaNechosh Asher Shlomo Lo Yochol Lachil Esayelah Besamincha Besachalavim. Because the altar of Shlomo HaMelech could not contain all the different sacrifices which are going on. And then we hear that it's a seven-day festival of a celebration for the large masses of Israel. And they then have Atzeres, a waiting day on the eighth day. And then they have Sukkot. So we have really as two seven-day festivals. And then the people are sent to their houses. Very, very beautiful. Everybody's happy. Everything he did was successful. Where are they shechting exactly? So this happens to be a dispute in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim describes that Rabbi Yehuda understood that we should read the Pesukim literally, which means to say that there was not enough space on top of the altar, and so therefore they sacrificed not only on the altar, but on the entire floor, because with the tens of thousands of korbanos being brought, it was only possible if they spread them out. And this, in a certain sense, is sanctifying the floor. Rabbi Yossi says, no, we should read this a little more figuratively. It really all took place on top of the Mizbeach. You're not allowed to bring a korban that's not on top of the Mizbeach. And the reason that this is possible is because unlike the Mizbeach of the Mishkan, which had an amma on an amma, 1 cubit by 1 cubit, this Mizbeach was 24 by 24 cubits, which means to say, is described in the language of Rabbi Yossi, that is, this area is chamesh me'os v'shivim v'sheish. It is 576 times the area of Moshe Rabbeinu's Mizbech, and it was possible. And therefore, he views it that really everything really did take place, in fact, on top of the Mizbech as well. We also see over here that there's two sets of seven here. So there's one festival of Sukkot, but Sukkot seems to be the second set of seven. So if you're doing the counting, that means the first set of seven must have been from some point in the middle of the Aseres Yemei Teshuvah till Sukkot itself. So which obviously yields a question, and that is so what do they do on Yom Kippur? The Radak presents two opinions, and the one opinion is that on the day of festivities, that was Yom Kippur, they didn't eat during those day of festivities. They were in the Beis HaMikdash, but they didn't do eat because that's an Isur Kares. You get excommunicated from you get cut off from the Jewish people if a person were to eat on Yom Kippur. However, the Radak does quote Chazal who say no. In fact, they ate. This is the one Yom Kippur in Jewish history that everybody ate. Why? Because when they inaugurated the Mishkan was inaugurated on Shabbos. Even though there's a command on Shabbos not to violate, not to do certain melachos, the Mishkan supersedes it. So they learned from there that Shabbos, which is actually a more severe level of Kedusha than Yom Kippur itself, if that was superseded by the Mishkan, then the inauguration of the Mikdash, which is greater than the Mishkan, should surely supersede the Yom Kippur, which is one step lower than Shabbos in this respect. And so therefore, ultimately, this was a Yom Kippur of celebration. What that shows you just the magnitude of the celebration that was going on. And finally, the last part of the Perek is from Sukkim Yud Beis to Chof Beis, in which Shlomo Melech has his second vision at night. And we're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to him and says the following: Shlomo Melech, I listened to your prayer. I chose this place to be a place of sacrifice. And whenever there's going to be a problem, whether it's going to be a drought, or whether it's going to be enemies, or it's going to be locusts, and people will humble their hearts and call to me and leave their bad ways, I will listen to them. And this is exactly what Shlomo Melech had said, the Beis HaMikdash was for. So Hashem is almost word for word agreeing to this. And he says, my eyes will always be open, my ears will always be attentive to listen to the prayers from this place. And he says, but I want you to know as well that you need to keep my commandments. I'm going to, if you do such, I'm going to make sure that you'll never be cut off and your legacy will never be cut off. But if you decide to leave me and follow other paths, other gods, other powers in this world, I will exile my people, I will retract my hashkacha, and leave this nation to their enemies, ultimately. And when people ask, why did this happen? Hashem says, because they abandoned me. That's the end of the vision. So a few things to notice is that there are two explicit visions in Shlomo Melech's life. The first was at Givon, when his first year of kingship, when he went up to the great altar at Givon, and that's when Shlomo Melech asked for wisdom and he was granted that gift. However, the second vision occurs much later on and seems to be also granting Shlomo Melech his request, which is that Yerushalayim, the Mikdash, should be a place of tefillah, and a makom hashras hashchina, that the chain of David should continue. However, in the second vision, it's conditional, meaning only if you listen to this. And the reason this is so is because this is actually much later on. If you go back to Sefer Melachim, you'll notice that the dating of this second vision, this nightly vision to Shlomo, is actually 20 years into his kingship. It takes 7 years to make the Beis HaMikdash, and another 13 years to build his own palace, and after that is when he receives this vision. Which means that Shlomo Melech had this prayer, and yes, the Esh did come down from the heaven, and yes, the clouds came into the Mikdash, but there was no articulation of the response to his request until a good many years later, over a decade later, which just shows how long it takes for even the great king Shlomo Melech to see his prayers being fulfilled, just to put things in perspective in terms of patience and seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's also the reason why that's significant is because later on in Shlomo Melech's rule, hairline fractures will start widening into cracks in his kingship, both on his moral side in terms of the amount of women that he marries and the complexity of that relationship, and also his policies. And that being the case, it is a little more complex at this point in time, and Hashem is giving this vision as a reminder that this is all contingent, not inherent. How will the Beis HaMikdash be destroyed? The Malbim points out that Ashalach me'al ponai, I'll send it from my face, which means to say the Malbim says that the way Hashem will destroy it is not necessarily by actively destroying it, but by removing his protection from it. And when his protection is removed, then there's nothing left to protect. And this takes us to a fascinating discussion that's happened in the Midrash, the Tanchuma in Shmoyis Parsha Yud, which is how long will the Shechina be in Yerushalayim? And there's different opinions in the Midrash. The one Midrash quotes the name of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, who says, "And when the house is standing, then Hashem's presence is there. When the Hashem's when the bias is destroyed, Hashem's presence will leave." Whereas the other opinion, Rabbi Lazar Ber Pedas, says, "No, whether the Beis HaMikdash is there or not, Hashem is there. Hashem's presence will be there." And finally, they're quoting Rabbi Achu, who says, "La'olam en Hashchina zaza mikosal ma'aravi shel Beis HaMikdash." The Western world will always be a place where a bastion where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence will be, and that's what it means in the pasuk. Hinezeh oimer achar kosleinu. Hashem will be standing behind our wall. That's referring to the kosal ma'aravi, and that's part of what's being said over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, "Shlomo Melech, I'm listening to your request. You dive into this place should be a special place. It is a special place, but in the end of the day, remember this context. If you and the people of Israel are not acting the correct way, it can be retracted." And finally, we end with a very beautiful description, which is the Shir HaMalos, which was Lishlomo, whether it was to Shlomo or it was him who's saying it, in Kuf Chav Zayin, the 127th Psalm in Tehillim, which reads the first pasuk as follows: Shir HaMalos, this is a song of ascents, Lishlomo to Shlomo. If Hashem won't build a house, then in vain will the builders build it. If Hashem lo yishmar ir, if Hashem won't guard the city, shav shakad shomer, then it's in vain that the guardsmen watch. And that's what's being said. Hashem's reminding Shlomo HaMelech, you can never rest on your laurels. It's never now that you're done, it's one and done, and everything's going to work. It's a continual relationship, it's continued effort, it's continued upward motion in order for this to succeed. And that's the message Hashem leaves Shlomo when giving him a second vision about agreeing to be part of the Beis HaMikdash. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.